Reveille, reveille, donks.
Look at us now, tip to tip. This is our life. This is our passion. That's the spirit we bring to this show.
I'm Luke Thomas.
I'm Brian Campbell.
This is Morning Combat.
It is Monday, the 22nd of March, 2021, and it is time, as it always is in this portion of the week, for Morning Combat. Hello, everyone. My name is Luke Thomas. I am from CBS Sports. The gentleman on the other side of the screen, he too is from CBS Sports, all the way from San Juan, Puerto Rico. My friend and yours, the, well, I would call you the apathy. You're more the Nicky Jam to my Maluma. It's Brian Campbell. Hi, Brian Campbell.
Hi, Luke. I didn't catch all of that because of my McDonald's Wi-Fi, but I'm sure it was pleasant and it wasn't insulting at all. But happy to be here, Luke. The 12-day odyssey is nearing completion, but yeah, we back. Okay, trust me, we back.
How was your weekend in Puerto Rico? What did you do?
Sun, fun. I got to taste the island, so to speak, Luke. Ooh. I got to say this. Look, the good Lord did something special in this. The beauty of this island, from the beaches to the mountains, the rainforest, and really the people, Luke, a passionate, loving group of folks. I've been welcomed with open arms, Luke, despite the rental car disaster of last week. And I'm happy to say that I have become one with this territory, Luke.
Did you have mofongo?
I have not had that yet. I have not. The food, maybe the food could be a little better, maybe. But, you know, what are we to complain about, Luke, you know?
Ooh,
what,
that's what a strong statement. Well, if you've never had mofongo, it's awesome. It's a Puerto Rican specialty. Okay, well, glad to see. You know what? I can't tell if it's the white balance on the camera. Did you get a tan or no? You don't look pasty, but I can't say you look tan either.
No, I did spend the day in the ocean yesterday, but I apparently went a little too heavy, Luke, on the SPF 50, hoping to avoid an outright rock lobster this Thursday night on NBC Sports. So maybe I should have toned it down. Maybe aimed for a little less pale, maybe a nice jaundicey mix. But, you know, what can you do, right?
And I'm guessing that you pee-peed in La Piscina, right? I'm betting you did.
Who
did
wouldn't,
that.
Luke? Right? I mean, that's what it's there for, right? You know? I mean, do you think early man looked around for a porta pot?
Yeah. Look, can we be honest about the power rankings of where it's like the most fun to urinate? Pool is your number one seed. Pool is Nick Saban's Alabama. Can we be honest about that?
Luke, did you ever notice that the embryonic womb is full of warm liquid, right? I mean, it's just where we're just trained for this, okay, Luke? You know what I'm saying? Why is three-quarters of the globe filled with water? You tell me.
I'm fulfilling my genetic obligations when I urinate in the pool. I want everyone to understand that. Okay, we have a lot of show to get to. There, in fact, was a lot of combat sports. UFC put on a show. It wasn't the best one, but there are some important topics to get to from that. We had a bunch. Actually, you know what? The biggest headlines from the weekend, we will not start this way, but I think the most interesting one, certainly anyway, came from the boxing side of things. So we'll look at that. Plus, we have some bad news about a UFC title fight. First things first, if you're watching, please give the video a thumbs up and then hit the subscribe button. Thank you to everyone who is joining us. This, of course, is brought to you by Showtime. If you would like to try Showtime, you certainly can. You can go to Showtime.com and get a 30-day free trial. And I believe they put the graphics up. If you get it now before Bellator, you can go to the URL you see right there, show.com/BellatorMMA, $4.99 for the first 6 months. And I keep telling folks, this is not like DAZN, where I'm a DAZN customer. And yes, I watched Virgil Ortiz over the weekend. It was sweet. We're going to talk about it. But when that's not happening, there's nothing to watch. You get the entirety of the on-demand Showtime experience if you're not watching Bellator, which is a ton. By the way, did you watch I think it's a three-part series they did on Tekashi 6ix9ine, the making of a supervillain on Showtime?
No, I have not seen that, Luke. Can you comment on it?
It's amazing. Giancarlo Esposito, who is the guy who plays Gus Fring in Breaking Bad, narrates it. He also plays Moff Gideon in The Mandalorian. And he does an incredible job narrating it, and they really tell the breadth of this story. They get many of the guys he snitched on. They get his former DJ. They get his former, like, longtime girlfriend who he has a child with, like all this stuff, and they have all this old footage and blah blah blah. It is super entertaining, very well made. And dude, I just feel like Giancarlo Esposito, everything he touches turns to gold. Like, he doesn't fuck anything up that he's in, you know?
No, and your passive-aggressive statements against DAZN have not been covered up well by saying you're a customer. You will have a Ukrainian oligarch on line one after the show, Luke, okay?
Also, what do you want me to say? Like, if fights ain't on, I ain't in it. I mean, there's just, I don't know what you want me to do, but okay.
Hey, there's a lot of Ock and Barack to digest. There's, Chris Mannix, our good friend Todd Grisham, who looks great without a shirt, okay? Hey, did you see Grish launched a UK-based boxing video game this weekend? Great for that guy. I love that guy. I
did not see that. That's pretty interesting. And I do love those guys, but, you know, I'm just saying, you can't watch the making of a supervillain with Tekashi 6ix9ine on DAZN. That's all I'm pointing out. All right, if you want to get some merch, and we are told that there's going to be a major update very soon, which none of you believe, but I'm telling you, they are shoving it down. BC, tell them what the truth is. They're coming on here every week and telling us that we got stuff, a tidal wave coming.
So while you, Luke, were doing your typical pre-show bathroom break, I was talking to the merch man on this Zoom call, and he says that the Merch 2.0, which will be available internationally, is at the printing presses as we speak, Luke. I assumed Showtime had sought out the cheapest Bangladeshi factory, but apparently it's U.S. made, Luke, okay? Made in the USA, and you and I will be receiving our first samples next week to wear during fight week of Pitbull Sanchez 2, Showtime Bellator MMA, the debut ahead of April 2nd. And shortly after, Luke, this crap will be available. And I can't wait. We've been promising. I mean, good God, I feel like Geraldo standing in front of Al Capone's vault. We've been promising this shit for a long time, Luke. But finally, our good friends in the UK, Australia, the UAE, Doha, Kiribati, Sao Tome and Principe, Comoros.
Okay, Cape Verde.
Friends, and those will be able to wear our shit. I cannot wait, Luke.
Sweet. All right. And then, I think that's really about it to get things started. So without further ado, let's. Okay, topic number one, BC. We start with UFC over the weekend. All right. Well, what happened? Derek Brunson wins in your main event, defeating Kevin Holland via unanimous decision. Not sure I feel about some of the scores, but not going to bicker with it too much. But here's the problem, BC. It's not so much a surprise, I think, to some anyway, or even a big deal that Brunson won. I don't think that's what people are upset about. What they are upset about is that Kevin Holland talked the entire way through it, appeared to be. When I say appear, I want to point out something. I did not listen with the volume on, so I was kind of surprised by some of the online reaction in terms of the severity of the takes. But the takes online anyway, BC, are mostly that they are really upset that Kevin Holland looked unprofessional, was a lack of seriousness, just seemed to not be invested in fighting the fight, more to be entertaining himself and having fun in there, and that really upset people. So what's the truth? Did Kevin Holland shit the bed, or is Derek Brunson 4 in a row now, 2 back-to-back overhyped prospects, deserving of more credit?
Well, look, you know, very few things are absolute in this game as we break down stuff. So when you make a hard statement, as I did on Twitter immediately after this bout, saying basically, I hate to say it, but Kevin Holland embarrassed himself in this fight. But what that doesn't mean, Luke, is it doesn't mean he wasn't close to a knockout at certain points. It doesn't mean that his strategy of seemingly aloofness and, you know, trash talk, it doesn't mean that there's not a calculation within that. So you got to understand the nuances here. And believe me, the reaction to this was incredibly polarizing. People calling me racist to people, you know, fully supporting it. Here's what I meant in my take, ultimately. I do think a lot of what Holland does keeps him loose. I got no problem with that, right? Being almost like he doesn't care, trash talking. I also think part of it was an attempt to set up Brunson. I don't know if you noticed, after round one, he comes up to Brunson, puts his arm around him, pats him on the ass. It was kind of the same stuff Holland did at the end of the face-off on the weigh-in, where it was sort of like, is he lulling him into a, you know, a friendship mode. There's some elements to that which is strategic, and considering the fact that Holland, who he did show this at certain points during this 5 rounds, can be explosive, can end a fight at any given time. I'm not here to say this guy's a clown. He had no business doing what he did. He has no strategy. He blew it. I'm just saying that kind of stuff works to a point. And when you get to a point where you are ultimately being dominated, was it an exciting fight? No. He was largely being controlled for most of the fight. It's got to be where the trash talk ends at that point and the sense of urgency kicks in. So, look, it made the fight entertaining. And you know me, I'm BC. I love bullshit, right? Him talking to Khabib in the corner, yes, it was entertaining. But this is the biggest fight of Kevin Holland's career, fresh off a 5-0 run from, you know, being a journeyman, we don't really know him, to being, is this guy a sneaky next big thing contender in this division? This was his close-up moment. And the fact that down the stretch of this fight, Luke, I did not see urgency. I did not see a commitment to winning. And even in those final seconds when he's sort of like, yep, it's over, see you later, and he's turning his back and walking away, how else should we react to that? It was an embarrassment. Doesn't mean he didn't have moments in this fight. Doesn't mean he can't bounce back from it. But this was not a great night, all things considered, when ESPN spent an hour or 2 hours before this fight, Luke, showing him buying jewelry, showing him buying a shoe collection. And again, I'm not saying a fighter can't live the spoils and do that, but it sort of showed a portrait, right? We don't live with Kevin Holland. We don't know the hard work. We don't know the focus. All we know is watching those vignettes and then watching his performance in the fight, it looked like a guy who, I don't want to say was overwhelmed, but something was off where he didn't put his best foot forward. I've given this speech before, of course, about Michel Pineda, and some people hated it. And they said, all BC. Well, look, when Pineda bit down and narrowed down the theatrics and focused more on inside the cage, he's looked fantastic of late. He looks like he could be something. Kevin Holland has amazing attributes inside of him. He can be the same thing. But there has to be a line, Luke, between I do this stuff to market myself, I do this stuff to motivate myself, but when it comes time to figure out what's happening inside that cage, your intentions have to be toward victory. This doesn't mean, again, that Holland did not have any moments or wasn't close to winning this fight, but all things considered, when you take a snapshot of what we saw over 25 minutes inside the cage, this was a bit embarrassing for a guy who was looked to be on the verge of busting loose and breaking forth. And in the end, this is what we're talking about after the fight. You tell me if this is a good look. I don't think it is.
All right, so I actually don't have as strong a revulsion to it. And in part, I think it's because I watched the fight without sound. And so, A, I didn't hear him talking, and B, I didn't hear the commentators talking about him talking. I mean, at times you can see him moving his lips, and you're right. He had a real buddy-buddy kind of body language with him. Here's the thing I'm up against. So answer me for this, and I'm not saying you're wrong, BC. I'm going to play devil's advocate here because I think you got a much more clarified position on this. What is the difference between what Kevin Holland does and again, I'm not saying there's not. I'm asking you to tell me what it is. What Kevin Holland does, and not so much Michel Pereira, but like Emmanuel Augustus. What would you say is the difference between that talking that he does that puts him in his comfort zone that is unusual and that gets him some wins sometimes, or at least, you know, certainly facilitates it nicely when he does win, but isn't a style you would want to copy outright? I realize there's probably a lot of differences, but what would you say?
Well, there's a lot of differences there. Emmanuel Augustus did the whole drunken, whatever, what do you call himself? The drunken master.
Yeah.
And a lot of that awkward movement and looking like he's turning away, but then he comes back with a punch. That's meant to distract and set up. And people think this is about, look, it's hard right now when you make a statement
like that. Do you think that, I'll let you keep going, but just to clarify, do you think Holland's trash talking, he just does it for reasons unrelated to strategy, or that it's also strategic or not? And I don't know that there's a right answer on this. I'm just asking you.
I think it's a combination of strategy to get in the head of his opponent and to fire himself up because it makes him the most loose. So when you make a statement like I did on Twitter, again, in 280 characters or whatever, you can't show your full nuance. I'm not saying nobody should trash talk in the cage. I love trash talk. It's catnip to me. I'm saying when it's not being used to funnel the best out of you, when it becomes a distraction, then you're going to get some criticism right here. I love theatrics. I love trash talking. It got to a point in this fight, watching from a distance, where I was seeing a guy who wasn't urgent and wasn't putting his best foot forward. I don't think it's necessarily comparable to Emmanuel Augustus, who was using that stuff to distract and set up his opponents. I think there were times Holland was doing that. I think Holland got to a point, though, where it had to be clear to him that he was losing this fight. And I didn't see a focus on, I need to do everything I need to do to win this now. That was disappointing. So then you get Dana White saying afterwards, I think he had a mini mental breakdown. I think he froze in front of the lights. I don't know if I'm going to go that far, Luke, but there was a disconnect inside of him where I don't know if he was okay. I came this far. I was on my back for most of the fight. I almost won by knockout. Hey, I'll take the L and move forward. I just saw somebody too willing to accept that and go, hey, I put on a show. That's cool. At this level, Luke, when you get to this point, it is about winning that fight. I'm all with the theatrics, but the theatrics have to be aimed toward winning the fight. That's why when Michel Pineda is gassing himself out, dancing to the cage, or trying to do backflips off the cage in the middle of a fight that don't seem to line up with his best foot forward to try to win it, I'm going to criticize you, because there are things you can do outside of the cage to market yourself, but when it comes inside the cage, if that's not aiming toward helping you put your best foot forward to win, you're going to draw criticism. And by the way, me criticizing Kevin Holland is actually a representation of, I believe this guy has legitimate elite talent. I want to see him put it together.
Had he not done all that trash talking, would he have won?
It's weird. It's weird. You keep saying the trash talking. It's not the trash
talking. The talking. All of that. All of those antics. All the things that contributed to it. If you put that aside, because by the way, I went back and I watched his Brendan Allen fight again, and he didn't do any talking there whatsoever, trash or otherwise. He still lost. Would he have won this bout if he had not done that?
I don't know, Luke. I don't know. You would like to have seen it's not like he's not without holes. You would like to see him have a better response to what Brunson was doing. Brunson controlled this fight with wrestling, but yet Brunson did also receive a lot of criticism for maybe not being offensive enough or looking to go for the finish. It looked like there were opportunities for Holland to try to figure out how to work his way back into the fight, and to see how close he came in two different instances to stop him via strikes. Would a removal of the antics allowed him to focus better? Maybe. But Luke, how can you not criticize somebody who's clowning between rounds and yelling at Habib, which again brought entertainment, but maybe that's the best time to talk to your team and figure out how to counteract what's actually happening and try to win the fight.
Yeah, I mean, I will only have two responses here. It sounds like what people are mostly upset about is not so much that he let a fight get away, but that he just exhibited, he broke code. There was a principle of seriousness to the matter that he did not adhere to. That's the best that I can seemingly understand from whatever. Again, listening on mute, had a very different experience. I didn't think it was great, but I was like, whatever. Here's my only response to all of this, which is to say, if it bothered you, the lack of seriousness, to me, it's like, what does a fighter want? Do they want to really get really far? Is he happy with how far he's gotten? You know, depending on what his goals are, I don't know whether to criticize him or not. If his goals are to get further than he is, well, then he is just, you know, acting buffoonish. If this is really what he wants, then I don't know, you live your life. But the thing that I think is kind of interesting to me is the question I asked you last, and I don't know that there's a good answer, but I'm going to hazard one, which is, had Holland not done any of those things, talking, blah, 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 would he have won? And I don't think the answer is yes. You can't really say for certain, obviously. No one really knows. But on this show on Friday, BC, we set up the reality that he has a 52% takedown defensive rate. Kevin Holland does, probably worse now. Going into that fight, it was 52% over a pretty decent stretch of takedown attempts and then obviously successful ones. You knew he wasn't going to get back up. You knew he's not a strong scrambler, and you knew he doesn't have some game off of his back. You knew a little bit. But what we also said, Brunson has lights out takedowns for the most part and is not necessarily going to be situated here to do a lot of ground and pound. We literally said all of those things and that it could be a boring 5-round fight. Dude, this is not a surprise. I mean, if you don't like what Kevin Holland did, fine. I don't really care one way or the other, but I can understand people being unsatisfied with that kind of an approach to the game in that kind of a scenario. It just seems really weird and off-putting. Fine. But I don't think that the outcome would have been even slightly different had he tried to not do any of those things that pissed people off. And so to me, it's like, if you want to be mad at Kevin Holland, last thing. If you want to be mad about
a question.
Yes, but let me just finish it. If you want to be mad about Kevin Holland, be mad at the fact that irrespective of this approach, he did not have the wrestling skills he needed to on Saturday night, period.
100%. But I want to ask you this. I think this sums up this whole debate to me. Did he exhaust every option to attempt to win this fight? Because I think that's ultimately what you ask of a fighter at this level. Sometimes fighters, it's just not in them to go for broken brawl. But did he exhaust every possible option to attempt to win this fight? My takeaway was no. That's ultimately my issue. Not the window dressing of the trash talk and the Habib stuff. Yes, that's stuff we pointed to make our point. But my ultimate point is there came a point where he just seemed to be okay with losing. Do you agree with that at all? Or are we on opposite ends of the spectrum and or the continent here?
I do agree that he did not put in as much effort as he could have. But you could say that about a lot of Kevin Holland fights, including many victories. You could say that probably about a lot of fighters in UFC, including in many victories. They don't always, every time, give everything they have to winning. I don't think that's a fair threshold. If you want to say he gave less than even average, yes, pretty fucking clearly he did not do a whole lot. I mean, I'm not going to tell you he deserved to win or that was like a great performance. It was a shitty performance. But I'm just trying to point out what you get with Kevin Holland here. I think people are right to be turned off by what he had done, but you got to make a separate argument about why he lost. It looked bad in light of a loss. Its absence does not create winning conditions. And so that to me is really the bigger issue here. He can strike and he's got a good chin and he is a game guy. He doesn't seem to get injured. There's a lot of reasons to believe in his upside. But unless he solves some of these other problems, it's just going to be what it's going to be. And then the talking might not really even be that big of an issue anymore.
Then let me ask you a counter question here as well, Luke, because I take, you know, people's responses and comments to me seriously. I want to understand, what am I missing? I did get a lot of people saying, BC, you just don't get it. So let me ask you this sort of devil's advocate question. There's a lot of people saying, ultimately, this is what I transcribe from what they're telling me, that, okay, within this fight, Holland knew he wasn't going to beat Brunson because Brunson had that wrestling control. They got to a certain point where Holland realized that. So what he ultimately did was made himself the storyline so that ultimately this loss doesn't really hurt him as much, because we are spending, for example, the opening 25 minutes of this show not talking about how Brunson controlled him to win it, but talking about Kevin Holland. Do you think in sort of a smarter than we're realizing way, that marketing-wise, this was actually a really strong move, that this won't really hurt him as much as we think, that had he done zero of these antics and just stayed underneath Brunson's wrestling control, that his brand would be hurt a lot more than it is now, where we're talking about it like crazy?
Maybe a little bit of that. I can see what you mean. Like, had he tried hard and still been dominated, that would have been worse. Here, it at least leaves a little bit of mystery. There probably is something to be said for that, because you can't. I think there are people who are confused about this, who think that if he had really just, you know, gone balls out and tried, he would have won. And so I think if you can curry some kind of support with that crowd, that might help you long term. Sure, that's fine. But there's no denying that, like, whatever visibility he gained from this, he squandered. You can't argue that he meaningfully added a fan base or whatever ones he had he appealed to, or that he raised his stock as like a figure of attraction that you would want to see. I don't think it's, you know, ruinous or anything like that, but this fight didn't contribute to that direction. That's all. By the way, Brunson did look pretty fucking good, dude. Like, I know he had problems in the second round. I get it. He didn't do a lot of passing. The guy's got 100% takedown defensive rate. Won four in a row now, two over hype prospects. Like, I don't know, man. I'm not saying he's fully reformed, BC, but, like, what's the difference between the Brunson of old and this one? I'm not necessarily seeing a bunch of new wrinkles, but I'm seeing a bunch of things where he used to make mistakes. All of those are gone. It's a lot more of a concerted, smart, disciplined, thought-out game. You gotta like it.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
It was efficient, right? And it wasn't as if Brunson didn't get into danger, where I thought there were two separate times. Maybe it was round two and four. I forgot specifics, but where I thought he was on the way out. I'm like, I've seen this story before, right? I like what he's doing. And look, there is a lot of criticism coming back at Brunson. I mean, people are almost discounting this performance altogether to just say, you know, he stuck with the one thing that was working and, man, he bore us out holding on to it. I don't necessarily see that. I see a guy who at 37 has figured out how to get the best of what's left of him. To his belief, he's at maybe the best point of his career in terms of the full understanding of the game mixed with the hard work, the experience. And I would agree to that. Could he have done a lot more to go for the finish and all of that? Possibly. But Luke, I don't think he's at a point in his career where he's going to wow us or is trying to wow us. He's trying to win fights. So when you understand who Derek Brunson is at 37 and what he's been through and what he learned about himself and the losses, altogether, I'll say, look, this was a solid performance. No, it wasn't, you know, entertaining as crap. It didn't lead me to believe Brunson is this much closer to beating an Israel Adesanya in a rematch to win the title. But he is still evolving at small increments. And when you win four in a row, which he's done, and if you keep doing that against top five guys, you're going to get there eventually anyway. So let's not call him John Fitch at the end of the day. Let's also not say this was sizzling. It was workmanlike. He did what he had to do to keep Holland's best chances away from winning. And at the end of the day, he survived in advance. And I think that's when you're 37, Luke, that's what you need to do.
By the way, before I get dead wronged, Holland did take down Brunson in the fifth, which busted that 100% takedown defensive rate bracket he had worked up. But still, in general, very, very good takedowns. And
Luke, before I get the takes of, you know, BC standing on the porch giving the old white guy take, do you agree that the video packages of Holland, like, didn't necessarily show the greatest light of a guy focused on winning? I know those are just, you know, hobbies outside the cage, but I took away from that, like, you know, I hope this guy's not spending all his paychecks right now.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It's like, you want to be very careful about being in a scenario where we're just judging everyone else's purchasing decisions. Like, if we were subject to that kind of scrutiny, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a couple things in your ledger you're not exactly going to be able to defend for, you know, public consumption reasons. So in that sense, I want to be very clear. But on the other hand, it was like, okay, but it's one thing to go through someone's like bank statement, and it's another one to take part in a shopping spree that's on videotape. Where, by the way, they had to do multiple takes of it because they got them going into the store, then they got the camera crew to walk in the store, and then we've done this, BC, then you walk in the door, and they splice all the film together. Like, you're taking part in that. And I get that they're taking part in something that's wants to promote the fight, but, you know, that's a choice, too, on his part. And so you just get a weird feeling. It's like, okay, you're a young guy. You're a great prize fighter. You had a sick 2020. You want to buy some shoes. Okay. I'm not going to judge it. You want to buy shoes and you want to buy a ring, and then the ring is, you know, it's specialized and everything. And you're like, I don't know. I don't want to judge it, dude. But like the total package of it all, little red flaggish.
A little bit, yeah. I will say this because again, BC likes Rebels, right? I like a lot of what Kevin Holland brings to the table from a marketing package. Believe me, that's why it kind of hurts me to be like, man, he kind of embarrassed himself, but he did. I actually liked his reaction, Luke. I don't know if you saw that video. I think he put it out on Instagram where he's basically like, I'm going to keep talking, you know, and if you don't like it, deuces. I actually liked that. Even though he's basically talking to me, he's like, look, I'm going to do me, and I think he should, Luke. I also think he should look a little bit closer and learn from this, because here's a very exciting striker who is at his best when he is loose and free. And as long as he can just sort of you know, bring that in just a bit, I think he's going to continue to be able to climb and find out how good he can be.
You know, last thing on this, you know what it reminded me of when he talks like that? That's what, like, that's what people do when they spar. You know, I mean, sparring is not a lot of talking. I mean, this is even by that standard excessive. But if you're talking to someone, the conversation could be anything, like, nice shot. If you hurt someone, are you okay before you continue? You know, I mean, there's any kind of small little things that are exchanged because it's sparring is important, and it can be, you know, certainly can go wrong if you're not paying attention, obviously. But in general, that's supposed to be a little bit less serious than the actual competitive side of it. He's like, dude, he's talking a lot like a dude who is annoying you in pornos. I've said this before, like just constantly gibbery jabbery. It is. I had to mute it. BC,
like me in the pre-show, Luke, when you. Like me during the pre-show warm-up when you kind of told me off twice, really, unnecessarily.
I didn't tell you off. I was just saying you were the Kevin Holland of the show because the river of inane shit that was coming out of your mouth pre-show was distracting and I was trying to get into the zone. But BC, that out of the way, we did 20 fucking minutes on this thing. Let's go to point number two if we can. We'll stick with the card for right now, BC. All right, so Kevin Holland, Derek Brunson maybe wasn't the most thrilling thing in the world. That's okay, but maybe there was, BC. Who else on the card from UFC Vegas, what is it, 22 at this point, whatever one it was, stood out to you, and why?
I was, you know, disappointed, certainly, when that co-main event fell apart with Gregor Gillespie and Brad Riddell, and it did sort of damage my expectations for this card. I'm going to give the card in general a lot of credit, though, because it was knockout after knockout. A lot of these undercard ones, Luke, hopefully will resurface today on Have You Seen This Shit? But I really like Max Payne Griffin's job getting up to the co-main event, elevated up when this original co-main fell apart, and then to see Griffin's comments afterwards that, Luke, it was essentially his dream as a fighter. We remember him as being a guy who's alternated wins and losses, you know, hasn't really been able to put it together yet in the welterweight division, went in there against a game and hungry Song Kanan. But, Luke, I liked his story, basically, if he was, you know, praying to God and saying, you know, my next goal is to get to that co-main event, and it happened this week. You know, it was like his prayers were answered. And Luke, he grasped that opportunity, and he showed some power, and it was a very strong win in getting that knockout, one of the highlights of the night with that first-round finish of Song there. How much do you think Max Payne Griffin at 35... is it too late here to put something together to go on a run, Luke? Because I sort of like the overall, you know, the mindset, the focus, and then the finish in this one.
I tend to think we've not seen the best of him. So if you're asking, is this about to be a stretch where we might, I'm pretty optimistic about it. How far he can take it, I don't, you know, do I think he can become champion? I don't know that we've seen enough to justify a belief in that. But you're right. I do feel like he's poised to, you know, make the most noise of his career to date. How about that? Something like that. He did look really good. He seems to be in a flow. Everything just seems to be working for him right now, you know? All right, so for me, I will go with Adrian Yanez. I went to 2-0 in the UFC with a third-round knockout over Gustavo Lopez. Yanez looked really, really good. Got tagged a little bit. He's still working his way through, obviously, his own game and getting better, but really crisp boxing, great decision-making, great timing, not a lot of wasted movement, really had Gustavo Lopez thinking through problems too slowly. He was seeing everything, reading everything. Lopez made it, you know, about as hard as he probably could have, so credit to him for going out there and trying, but he was up against it with a guy like Yanez. Keep your eye on him. He appears to be somebody who is who might be making some noise in the future. Right, BC?
And Luke, you and him had a little exchange on Twitter, right? I wonder if he's watching right now. War Yanez, bro.
He might. He might be. Yeah, I guess he follows me. I didn't know. And I said something nice about his timing because his timing was ridiculous. If you look at the KO shot, BC, from the one, obviously the one that put him out, Lopez, it lands when Lopez is throwing a big punch and lands right when he gets square. In other words, it catches him right in the dead middle of his attempt. Just really impeccable timing, and I shouted it out. He liked it, I guess. So yeah, pretty great moment from that.
And Luke, anybody who wonders our thoughts on that women's strawweight bout, Montserrat Cornejo Ruiz or whatever her name is against Cheyenne Bays, check out Have You Seen This Shit later in this show, Luke. That was a wild ride. And hey, how about Tui Vasa there sending Harry Humbuckler to the deep dark depths and then probably taking a crap in the shoe afterwards, Luke. Well, I will say this about Tui Vasa, man. Win or lose, it is fun to watch, and I do wait by the screen for hopes that he'll drink the shoey afterwards, Luke. I don't know if we'll ever see Harry Honglicker again. I don't know where they found that guy, Luke, but he tried to bring it, and Tuivasa sent him there. He sent him, yeah.
Not a great fight. By the way, it's not Cornejo, it's Conejo, which means rabbit in Spanish. Yes, you got something good for her. Have you seen this shit? What did you think of her tattoos, Conejo?
Those are wild, Luke. Not only the tattoo on Titi, but the ones on the back of the thigh when she's rolling on the camera. You know, it's art, bro. That's art. Okay, I mean, don't ask me. You're the ink connoisseur, LT. All right, check out the forearm, brother. Yeah,
a lot of tattoo culture is. A key part of tattoo culture appears to be overlapping with horror fans. I'm not into the Pennywise. It was a good tattoo, but I'm not into the Pennywise tattoos or, you know, Freddy Krueger and shit. I'm not into that kind of thing. That's not for me. Okay. Let's go to point number three. Okay. This is...
Okay, Luke. You into anime by any chance, Luke? MMA and anime have a weird crossover. I don't get it, Luke. I don't get it.
Anime and what does?
Anime and MMA. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's just the new generation. You? I'm not into that shit. All right. BC, I have bad news for you. I know that Brad Riddell was supposed to fight Gregor Gillespie at the co-main event over the weekend, and it didn't happen. And I know that he didn't do that, not because he caught COVID, but he was traveling with Alexander Volkanovski, who he is sort of teammate/coach with. And Alexander Volkanovski, your reigning UFC featherweight champion, has tested positive for COVID. Now, here is the interesting part. I want to be clear about this. To our knowledge, take that for what it's worth, he did not get it from breaking protocol. They didn't take their masks off and go to a Buffalo Wild Wings. They had done everything that they were asked to do in going through transit and getting here and blah, blah, blah. So no one really knows exactly how he got it inside of this either travel experience or this bubble or wherever the transmission occurred, but it occurred. So now that fight between Ortega and he, that was supposed to be this weekend, if memory serves, is now delayed. We don't know how delayed, but BC, I'll go to you first, please. Your overall reaction to this shitty news.
Well, I'd like to see their flight plan. Did they stop in Miami by any chance on a layover on the way in, Luke? Super spreaders unite. It's disappointing, Luke, because UFC is on such an incredible roll right now. We're all waiting for 261 with that insane triple header there. And 260 looking strong with Stipe Francis, too. And I really wanted to see this. Look, it's still available on Morning Combat on the YouTube page. My interview with Brian Ortega, which, Luke, was a wild one. Okay, that man is... he's focused. He's either focused or he's lost something up here, Luke. That was an intense interview. We talked Halle Berry. We talked a lot of stuff. I loved it. But in terms of this, Luke, you hate to see it. And hopefully, as it seems, they're going to reschedule it soon. What else can we say to that? Does this bump Tyron Woodley up to the co-main here against Vicente Luque in your eyes?
It might, but hold on, let's stick with this for a second. Here's the thing about these, like, shows. They're going to do one in Houston now, too. Again, dude, I don't know what Florida is going to look like. And you could say, oh, look at Miami. Okay, well, that's not Duval County. I don't think Duval County is doing great. I should be clear, I don't think it's prudent to be putting on shows. But let's see, before we all freak out, let's just see exactly where the numbers are at that time. But here's the deal. It's not just an issue of... is the audience going to spread it to each other? This is the real reality. You got a lot of international fighters all over the UFC, and some of those things take place in Fight Island, but a lot of it now is going to increasingly take place in the United States. It's got a much more, let's say, lax attitude towards these things than other countries. Dana White wants to take advantage of those lax attitudes. And if a fighter gets it, dude, doesn't matter if they get sick, doesn't matter if they feel fine, you get this shit, you are off the card. That's the really if having a shared destiny is not enough to make you care about not spreading COVID to other people or getting it and then potentially spreading it, maybe the idea of your fight cards being ruined might. And I think that this is a situation where, dude, I bet Volkanovski and Riddell, I don't think that they took that shit lightly. I bet that they did what they needed to. And so you have to wonder, how the fuck did they get this? Because they know too. You get this, does not matter how you feel. They are not going to let you compete. You are off the card. It has majorly impactful results. And dude, Brad Riddell, you can understand this. He just had a kid. His wife just gave birth, I think like a month or two ago, maybe even less than that. Now what does he do? He doesn't get a paycheck. Does he go back to New Zealand, go back on 2 weeks quarantine? Wait, does he stay here and then get put on another card and then go back and miss a month of his child's life? Like, I feel terrible for Brad. I mean, Volkanovski's got kids, they're a little bit older, but you can see, dude, just testing positive is fucking devastating. I feel for these guys, but we have got to work in careful environments.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting next few weeks because I was pro UFC taking a very bold move for 261, putting it in Jacksonville, doing the full arena, closed arena for the first time, 15K. We know that whole story. Luke, I'm wondering, though, and, you know, even with UFC's incredibly safe and responsible methods of testing, of spending the money to quarantine, of the all that stuff through Fight Island and what have you, how many more of these main and co-mains are we going to, you know, could we lose ahead of 261 before this starts to look like a bad idea? And I know that people have wildly different views on this. You and I, to some degree, have different views. But obviously, a lot of our fans are just sort of like, what? COVID? What? So I get that people are all over the place. But Luke, how bad could this get? You know, how much of a super spreader event could 261 be? Is this the right time? I mean, you're never going to know when it's the right time until you go for it. I really just hope, above all, that that these fights stay together, that obviously the fans are safe in the building. I don't know, Luke. It's tough. It's tough, man.
It's tough. I mean, listen, again, Luke,
this is my first global pandemic. You know, I don't have a lot of reference points.
Let's just see where things are in Florida in a month. You know, or I should say in Duval County and in Jacksonville specifically. Let's just see how it goes. But you can see
a great documentary, MK following you to Jacksonville. That is must see theater, Luke.
Without a vaccine, I'm not going to fucking Florida. Sorry. No. Without a vaccine, I'm not going to Florida. No. This diseased state.
Well, luckily, Luke, didn't you get pricked already? Didn't they prick you yet?
No, not yet. This week.
Oh, wow.
Gotta get that vax, buddy. All right. Yes, I guess we'll have to see. So let me ask you this. Where should they put the fight? I mean, do you want to see it next week? Could they? How long do they have to delay if you test positive for COVID? I think it's usually like 2 to 3 weeks. See, I feel terrible for Brad Riddell. I don't know what the fuck you're supposed to do now, man. It's a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my take. You're damn right it is, Luke. Okay?
Thanks. Very great contribution. Okay. Real quickly, BC, let's now go to the world of boxing, which we're putting it later in the show, but honestly, I thought it was a little bit more entertaining this weekend in general. So, Virgil Ortiz Jr., the golden boy, now that Canelo's no longer there, I guess Ryan Garcia might be, but certainly Virgil Ortiz, a bit of a head-turner in a number of his own respects. He fought Maurice Hooker and won and stopped him, I think it was inside the seventh or so, something like that, and just did it with... he was tested a little bit, but he shined. I thought he passed this test with flying colors, BC. So, number one, your reaction to the win over Hooker. But the bigger question now is, okay, do we have another big player at 147 pounds? Is this a guy who can really get some serious work done at the top here? He just might be. So, should a fight between Ortiz Jr. and Bud Crawford be next?
Well, let me pause the Bud Crawford part of it to say, look, this kid's 22 years old, Luke. He is the real deal. And this is why you book fights like the Maurice Hooker fight. And again, I know it played out the way we ultimately thought it would, especially because even though Hooker had one loss, that one loss came against Ortiz's stablemate, Jose Ramirez, your unbeaten unified champion at 140 pounds. And in a lot of ways, Luke, that Ramirez fight looked like this Ortiz fight, where Hooker is tough enough, hits hard enough, and has that sneaky long reach. He had a 4.5-inch reach advantage on Ortiz, where he is going to make you fight. He's going to be in that fight. But if you're good enough, ultimately, you can stop him. So this is why you book these fights, because Ortiz not only had the result, which was best case scenario, but he had to work for it to earn it. I love that at the end of the fight, Ortiz had swelling around both eyes. Why? Because he had to go in there and fight for it. Hooker can punch hard. He's a smart boxer when he needs to. He stayed on the outside of that jab at a lot of times. And I just thought Ortiz, top to bottom, Luke, showed you exactly what he has. Look, I mean, if he was perfect and didn't get hit, he wouldn't be that exciting. His ability to balance, not exactly similar to a Triple G. They got different styles. They're different fighters. But one thing about Triple G in his prime, Luke, was he was able to stand in the pocket and brawl with you, yet really not take a ton of damage because of how responsible his defense was and how good of a boxer he was. At 22, Virgil Ortiz Jr. has an incredible understanding of boxing to be able to get on the inside, stay behind that high guard, not get beat up or tagged a ton, go to the body, do a lot of great stuff. Has this show fallen apart again? I mean, what is going on with this McDonald's Wi-Fi? All right, we're reconnecting here. I don't know if we're live here. I mean, you know, I can just...
There he is.
My camera on. Do I have pit stains again?
There he is. Yeah, you got some pit stains for
this,
real.
Look at this Puerto Rico pit stains.
They heard you the whole time.
I've got pit stains in Puerto Rico. So my point here, Luke, is that Ortiz has so much savvy and veteranship to his young game. I love everything I saw. I love the adjustments he made, the power he has in the end. He made this a firefight because that was, in a lot of ways, his best chance to get Hooker out of there. Get inside under the jab and show us what you're made of. Luke, from what I saw, he's made of the goods. Is he ready for Bud Crawford now? I don't know. But the fact that he's basically looking around at the landscape of the type of fighters he has access to in the DAZN silo, right? Not a ton of welterweight stars, because if you're looking at the welterweight division, the star division of this sport, it's Terrence Crawford on his own island, and it's everybody else under the PBC banner. And the fact that we might be angling toward Bud Crawford right now, I love the fact that he's like, I don't know if I'm ready, but I am going after it. I want it. He was somehow humble in the after interview and aggressive. And Luke, is it sad that both Spence and Bud are in the same arena on Saturday night and that they both got interviewed and basically were like, I'm done with that fight, forget it? Is that a sad editorial on boxing? You're damn right it is. Yeah. I mean, screw that, right? We've already seen recently Fury Wilder double network pay-per-views come together. It's bullshit. We're not going to see Spence versus Crawford next. But if we get Bud Crawford versus Ortiz next, if Oscar and Bob can find a way to make this work, Luke, that is a must-see fight. You can't favor Virgil Ortiz. No, you certainly can't. Bud Crawford might be the best fighter in the world, right? But the fact that he's got the chutzpah to go after it, I love this kid. I can't wait to see how good he can be.
So basically the deal is Golden Boy and Top Rank will work together, but Top Rank and PBC won't. Is that the idea?
Well, they did for Fury and Wilder, Luke. It's always case by case. I think it does have a lot to do with Bud Crawford's contract coming toward the end in October. Will him and Top Rank be able to repair it, right? There's a lot in the air right now, okay? I think Bud Crawford could fight all those PBC guys, but he may have to go to the PBC to do it. But if our in-between, if Crawford's last fight under Top Rank, presumably, is a joint fight with Ortiz, let's super spread that shit, Luke. Let's get in the front row, you and me, arm around each other, brother. Let's enjoy this, okay?
I would love to go to that fight, vaccinated, obviously. But, okay, so let's think about this for a second. So if you're Virgil Ortiz, why would you call out Bud Crawford? Because you're only 22. Maybe you can beat him, maybe you can't. It's certainly interesting. But the other options you have there are not that... Like, I feel like Bud Crawford's got more options, even on his own island, than Virgil. And I'll tell you why. Well, you said no, so tell me why you couldn't do that. Because who would Manny Pacquiao make a fight with first, Ortiz or Crawford? Feels like Crawford, right?
Well, the problem is the only free agent welterweights outside of PBC who matter right now, because, look, you know, Amir Khan's on the way out, all this stuff, is Mikey Garcia and Pacquiao, and they seem close to wanting to fight each other. So neither Crawford's already ran through the Top Rank stable 2-3 times. This is why this is just kind of perfect that they both need each other, meaning Virgil Ortiz and Crawford. You could argue that Virgil doesn't need him yet and at 22 could keep climbing the ladder. But Luke, how many B and B minus and C plus guys do you need to knock out before you want to find out how great you are? It's time for Virgil Ortiz, even though he's only 22, to find out how great he is. The fact that Crawford is standing there and seems willing, and do it. And here's the cool part is that, you know, Ortiz just fought Hooker, who's trained by BOMAC, Brian McIntyre, who is also Terrence Crawford's trainer, right? And BOMAC was in Hooker's corner when he fought Jose Ramirez, who has Robert Garcia, who is Virgil Ortiz's trainer. So there's a lot of, like, you know, it's almost like this fight's been set up and it's time to find this out. And look, this is by far, on paper, the toughest challenge Bud Crawford would have had since moving up to 147 pounds. I mean, it is just a perfect fight in so many ways. You would favor Bud Crawford almost even solidly, but this is the type of guy who's going to get inside and make Bud be nasty. So you want to see that. Luke, can I get your opinion on the Maurice Hooker interview with Chris Mannix after the fight? Did you see that?
I didn't see that. I turned it off after he lost. What happened?
Okay, so Maurice Hooker not only succumbed to body shots when he was knocked out, but he hurt his right hand in the process. So he had his right hand all bandaged up, and, you know, Mannix was like, was the knockout because you were hurt or because you hurt your hand? And so Hooker's kind of explaining it, and the crowd starts to boo him, Luke, and he stops in mid-interview with Mannix and is like, everybody booing me? Fuck y'all, I'm a warrior. And Luke, he left the interview, stepped through the ropes, and started to like go at the fans, and they had to hold him back. I was like, remember, you know that scene in White Man Can't Jump when Marcus Johnson is in the crowd during the two-on-two tournament, and the tournament turns into a fight, and that little white guy's like, oh my God, we're going to lose our sponsors. And Marcus Johnson's like, yeah, yeah. That's what I was like watching that shit. Get him. Yeah, that was great, Luke.
That's a good pull. I did not see that. It reminds me of Ally Aquinta after he fought Jorge Masvidal in Fairfax, Virginia. You're going to boo me? You're going to boo me? Yeah, I remember that pretty clearly. I don't have a reaction to it.
I'll sell you a condo. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't have much of a reaction to it except to say Virgil Ortiz versus Bud Crawford. BC, can you put a likelihood on that for 2021?
Well, you know, boxing's got tricks, Luke. I don't know Terrence Crawford's current mandatory situation. But look, if you're Bob Arum and you're not sure if you're going to lose Crawford to the PBC, maybe the best thing you could do is make a fight with somebody who's not in the PBC. Because my argument as to why we will not see Spence versus Crawford now, Luke, is why would you basically give the PBC a fight when he's not under contract with them as like an advertisement for them to just sway him and take him. So then after Spence, Crawford could fight Porter and Danny Garcia and all those guys. Yeah, I think it's very likely we see it this year. And, you know, I would jump out of my pantalones, Luke, to see that shit. Yes. 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 Pantalones. Luke, I got to get some Mofongo. Motherfucker, I got to get some Mofongo.
Mofongo,
you know what I'm
saying? Not Mofongo. Mofongo. You gotta put a little effort into it. All right, last but not least, BC. I watched this because why not watch it? It was funny. I never go to Georgetown because I fucking hate that side of town. But I went over there and I had to shop with my wife and I made a deal with her because the one place she wanted to go, a shopping store, had I think it was ESPN or whatever version had it on. And so I watched Artur Beterbiev or Beterbiev or whatever face against this German Dinez. And he fucking demolished him. It was not especially close. It went a little bit longer than I thought it might. Jesus Christ, this was uninteresting. He looked to be, Beterbiev, whatever, in tremendous physical condition. Your boy Joe Tessitore was taking his pants off, talking about how much muscle this guy had. I couldn't believe. I was like, Joe, settle down, my guy. He is jacked, but Jesus. Okay, dude, did you learn anything after this 18-month layoff?
Well, Luke, I don't know if you – I think we learned a couple negatives, unfortunately. Like, he won handily, but, look, Dinus was supposed to be a lamb, you know, ready for the slaughter. I'll give Dinus credit. He pressed. He, you know, he got knocked down early but kept coming. Unfortunately, Luke, he showed his layoff is the best thing I can say. It had been 18 months, whatever, since Beterbiev had fought. He is 36 now, so I think they accurately portrayed – in the build-up to that fight on the broadcast that, like, it's time. He's going to have to package some fights together. We know that if Joe Smith Jr., the big-punching Long Islander who has a belt at once, or he's fighting Maxim Vlasov coming up, if Joe Smith wins that fight, he'll bring his belt into a unification for three of the four titles, so that could be a fun next fight for Beterbiev, Beterbiev, you better believe it. But, Luke, he wasn't completely sharp. He had his moments. He never got into trouble, but he did get hit with more shots than maybe he should have against a guy of Adam Dinus's quality. But, you know, all things considered, there were no scary moments or major hiccups. And this guy is really good, and I hope he can stay busy and show us it. Luke, did you happen to see the pre-fight interview involving Mark Kriegel, GSP, and Beterbiev? And I didn't know that GSP and Beterbiev, who both live in Montreal, are like best bros, train at the same gym. They're like, you know, peanut butter and jelly there. It was pretty fun to see.
I shared that video on YouTube like 2 weeks ago. I'm glad you saw it.
Luke, I don't really search out your Twitter account because I get all the good stuff through text. And I just, you know, I filter that shit. Latina big booties on this side. Real weird reactions to people shitting their pants on this side. You know, people don't, Luke, if people only knew how uneducated your text mannerisms are, you know? They think I'm the reject in this relationship, okay?
I do send you filthy, filthy things via text message and DM. I send horrible, horrible messages to you every day.
And usually I'm busy working or with the family and I see Luke Thomas pop up on the phone. I'm like, oh, that's my quarterback. It's my man, right? Let me see. Does he have important information about the future of our business relationship together? No. He doesn't.
He just has a question about masturbating at the bus stop. I don't understand what he's doing. Sorry. All right. Okay, BC. Well, I watched the fight. I didn't learn shit. He looked like ass. What are you going to say? There you go. There's my analysis. Good enough?
There's your anal, sis. Got it. Yeah.
All right. So it's time now where you get to ask us questions on the show. We put out a post on Instagram every Sunday soliciting questions so we can answer them on Monday's show. It is time for DMs from Donks. All right. This comes to us first from @heavy.falcon. Nick Diaz versus Kevin Holland. Who wins the fight and who wins the in-fight banter? I don't find Kevin Holland's shtick funny. That's just me.
Kevin Holland would win the fight by decision because Nick Diaz would ultimately turn into like the Anderson Silva version of Nick Diaz and kind of avoid contact, and lay around and do weird shit. But I'd be front row to see how weird that shit would get. I would love the banter between them. Luke, it might be the kind of thing, you know, when two great wrestlers fight, like think Covington versus Usman, sometimes they cancel each other out. In that fight, they just decided that they would cancel each other out and they just threw fisticuffs for 25 minutes, but or 23 minutes, whatever. Sometimes it cancels each other out. I would like to see whether the weirdness and the trash talking between the two of them ultimately just cancel each other out, that they just ended the fight with like a hug and a kiss and we're like, you know, we're brothers forever. It's an experiment, social experiment that I'd be willing to see, Luke.
Yeah, I don't find that kind of stuff charming. All right. From @tjm.norrisblack. This is a fucking great question. Whoa. Why do you think there seems to be much less prevalence of eye pokes in women's fights compared to men's? Jesus, that's a good question. I do not know. What do you think, BC?
It's very interesting. I guess it's a fair point. I will say though that you noticed in Saturday's broadcast a much, much more focused effort of the referees warning fighters who had the fingers exposed, who even looked like they were getting close to eye pokeville, Luke. And that is a strong direction forward. I don't really have an answer as to why we don't see as many women's fights affected by this. It's not that it doesn't happen. I don't know, Luke. You tell me, okay? This is a good question. I don't have
an answer. I'm just going to hazard a guess. Would it be because they fight at slightly different ranges? Do they not use open hand pawing or grabbing as commonly as the men? Do they more commonly just clench and throw? Fuck, that's a great question. I'd have to really study that to have a better answer, but that is, it's definitely something to pay attention to. I don't know if it's because they're just more disciplined fighters or because they don't have the same best practices around reaching. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. It's a great question, though. Jesus.
Yeah, it is. It is.
All right. @GregLeach99 BC. Do you think Stipe Miocic being the underdog this Saturday is warranted? Jesus, is he? Or should he be the favorite considering his dominance in the first fight? Now, if the odds are to be believed, I'll pull them up here. Our friends at William Hill, BC, they've got him as barely an underdog. Plus 100 to Francis's minus 125. So it's pretty close to a pick 'em, BC. What do you think?
Yeah, let's not forget that Ngannou was also the betting favorite ahead of that first fight. You know, after he had sent Alistair Overeem to a dark, dark place with, I think, the best knockout in UFC history, by the way. I actually think in this case, Luke, yes, there are an insane amount of questions still about Ngannou. I think he should be the betting favorite because let's not forget what happened in that first fight in the first round. Like, again, do you see Stipe's face afterwards? He had to walk through hell early. Ngannou is a freak that is rare in these parts, where it don't matter the stakes, the circumstances, the opponent, he can end any fight at any time. And I think we do have to ask ourselves this for Stipe. And yes, I will remind everyone that I've essentially picked against Stipe in every single one of his major fights. It just went down that way. Yes, he has a supernatural ability to recover, to take damage, to figure out ways to win. His adjustments he made against DC in both fights were incredible. But how much can one man take? And the thing is, I don't care how much better you are against Ngannou, fight him enough times, he's going to find your chin. So, Luke, I will actually say this seems warranted right now.
Yeah. I don't know, BC. I don't know. I don't know. The lingering question about this fight, someone asked it in the chat, is like, has he really gotten better, talking about Francis? And the answer is probably just by virtue of training, he's gotten somewhat better. But has he? The question is, has he gotten better enough to win the fight? Really, that's really what they're asking. And dude, there's just no way to know. There's just you just don't have any tape of any kind of reliable sort to know. You do know that if he lands a big punch, Stipe's fucked, right? That's true for anybody because you know he's not made out of vibranium. But short of that, I don't know what the hell's going to happen here. I could easily see a situation where it's like, oh, right, he actually hasn't improved at all. That's just all sort of smoke and mirrors. Or he goes in there and bodies this guy. And I don't know if I give each but one of those equal probability,
Luke,
but I can't say which one's true.
Even if he hasn't improved, he can still win this straight by knockout. I mean, the first fight was close. And, you know, Stipe's chin and his resolve are incredible. But you've also seen Stipe hurt in a lot of these fights, right? You know, we've seen him knocked out by DC. Good God, the damn skyscraper sent him to hell that one time, Luke. So it's possible, bro. It is very possible. And the betting oddsmen are favoring the younger, not younger by much, but the younger, you know, less wear and tear, a guy who only goes in there for 25 seconds, 30 seconds a minute at a time and has ungodly strength. I mean, scary. Look, this man is a physical specimen. He is a freak of nature, okay? You once told Yoel Romero to his face that your neck is the size of a tire. You see this man, Francis Ngannou, shirtless, Luke, and you'll inevitably, you know, hide, right? I mean, wow.
Why don't you go bang him? Yeah, all right.
Can you back me up? So don't let me hang out there alone with this awkwardness, please. Yeah. Affirm my weirdness, please. Man, say yes, BC. You're right. The guy's a brick shithouse, bro.
No, I just think you're weird. All right. At AAA1017, I'm just going to say it like that. How did Justin Gaethje, BC, go from being number one contender to now the only lightweight without a dance partner? I mean, we know the mechanics of how it happened, but I guess the question is, like, what the hell are you supposed to do with this guy now?
It's timing. It's just bad timing, right? You know, he's the last guy there to fight Khabib. It's just bad timing that he's coming off a loss right now where both Chandler and Oliveira are streaking. So, look, if Chandler does not beat Hooker by early knockout, Gaethje could be fighting fighting Do Bronx for all we know for the title right now. I mean, there's a lot, you know, and certainly it could be Oliveira versus Poirier, which it probably should be. It just so happens that Poirier has the window for the Conor trilogy. And by the way, let's pause right here because we did get a lot of feedback of this guy saying, hey, Luke and BC, like, you're not making it look easy with this. How many interviews do you have to see Dustin Poirier mention both before and after the Conor fight that he values a trilogy with Conor more than he does the title? We get that. We understand that. Okay, we were sort of devil's advocating and trying to figure out the situation. But yeah, Luke, it's just bad timing for Gaethje at the moment. I did like his social media response that he thought he was training for the Chandler fight only to find out that Oliveira got it, and he's just going to keep training. He's just going to keep being him. He'll be back. He'll get a big fight. I think we saw enough good of him in that Khabib fight, Luke. I know the storyline could be, you know, he ultimately succumbed like everybody else did, and it was once the fight got to the ground, it was a quick consummation. But Luke, he was one leg kick away from putting
dude,
that.
You are
going
to go. You are going to go to the grave, really believing that Khabib was on his last legs, aren't you?
I will get Khabib to admit that on camera one day, and then you will eat your shit, Luke. You'll eat it out of Tai Tuivasa's shoe, okay, Luke? Yes. Yes, okay? The curse of no selling that joke last week, Luke, will come back to haunt you. Yes.
Dude,
you
and I know that some of the mouth breathers love all of your jokes, but I have a refined palate, and only the very best ones get through, which happens on occasion. Oh, God. Listen.
Okay.
We need to talk about urinating in pools more as I talk about my palate for comedy. All right. At Skybound Fitness. That sounds like a fucking account of a gym. Is this Tyron Woodley's last fight on his contract? I don't know if that's true, if it is or it isn't. But surely if he loses his 20th round in a row, he packs his bag. So he's lost, what, 3 5-round fights in a row, which means he's lost 15 rounds in a row. If he loses, well, this one will only be 3, so it'd actually be his 18th round. But BC, if he loses 18 rounds in a row, you think the UFC tells him to pound sand somewhere else?
I was thinking about this. I think he still has the, even though he, you know, Dana doesn't love him, we know that, he still has the name value and a little bit of relevance left, and he's lost a lot of relevance, believe me, Luke, that should he go out there and get into an absolute war with Luque and show a ton of heart, and then let's say lose by decision, he's not packing his bags unless Dana's just like, F him, right? I think there is a way he can lose and not lose his job, but he's got to show heart, and he's got to be in this, and he's got to fight to win, which we can be very honest, over the last 3 fights, we didn't really see this guy fight to win. There's been a large, major disconnect, and it's been disappointing to see the quickness of how quickly he went downhill, and not a Henin Barão type go downhill where everyone's just knocking you out, just to, you know, lifelessness we saw. Yes, from the stand, there is maybe a small percentage you can lose and move on, but it's not wrong to call this a win or go home when you consider how unloved he was, even as champion with the promotion. Maybe some of that is a difficulty to deal with. I don't know. I'm not at the negotiation table. I've always felt like they didn't give him, the best foot forward from a marketing standpoint. But Luke, forget all that shit. Just as like a competitor and a man standpoint, there's a lot at stake here for Tyron Woodley to just remind us and maybe remind himself like who he is and you know how good he can be. I mean, he's 38. He's not gonna. I don't expect a run back to the championship. I just hope for his sake, Luke, he can redeem his good name, because those were damaging losses in a lot of ways, and I hated to see that because nobody supported his pound for pound relevance when he was champion and the fact that he. You know, if you look at the defenses, he's one of the better welterweight champions in history. I hate to see how it's fallen apart, even if he had that really weird assless acting performance in that Netflix flick, Luke, with the cock chewing on his cock. I don't understand that art.
You mean Luke, the raccoon that ate his genitals?
Yeah, I don't get that, Luke. But then again, you listen to School Shooting Rock, so I don't know. Whatever. I mean, you know, whatever, Luke. I like jazz. I like the real music, Luke. The more I get into jazz, I realize like that's music.
That's your painfully art, white.
No, that like I missed out all along. That's the realest of the real music, Luke. Okay, Aaron Bronstedt is in my DMs left and right, telling me to listen to this and that. That's a man who gets class. That's a Canadian journalist who gets that shit, Luke. I love that man. Okay, AB.
Well, if you look at William Hill sports betting, Tyron Woodley is the second biggest underdog on the card. Now that's still not a whole lot because he's sitting at +210. Which is a significant underdog position, but not the craziest one you've ever seen. Still, why would you pick Tyron Woodley here? I mean, what has he shown you in 15 rounds that would ever make you think he could beat Vicente Luque at this point in his career? Nothing that I would say, but MMA's crazy, one never knows.
What if he got an insane shape for this and he went back to old school Oklahoma wrestling? Tyron Woodley, and he's like, I'm gonna Derek Brunson this guy.
He didn't wrestle for Oklahoma.
Oklahoma State, Luke. I'm meaning the state of Oklahoma.
He didn't wrestle for Oklahoma State either.
Where did he wrestle, Luke? Just say it out loud, okay?
Missouri.
Okay, Omaha, somewhere in Middle America, Luke. Okay, I mean, really, what are we? We're, you know, come on. What do you want from me, Luke? Right?
I know, flyover country. That you get mad at me for calling flyover country, and you're like, it's just all one big territory of hillbillies and toothless meth addicts.
South Dakota. It's like the middle, Luke. It's the tornado bread belt. I don't know, Luke. Okay, I'm from the East Coast. We have a little bit of an arrogance with that, Luke. You know.
Why would living in Connecticut give you even a little bit of arrogance?
Well, people don't realize, Luke, because I'm actually from the bottom of Connecticut, okay? I don't know if we've talked about this before, Luke, but I'm from an area in Connecticut where you got to earn it, bro, okay? You got to fucking earn it, all right? Nothing's handed to you. Yeah. You know what's handed to you? A pink slip, Luke, okay?
You're just from a boring part of Connecticut, not a rough part of Connecticut. For my 19th birthday,
I got a union card and a wedding book.
You're from a place that's just not interesting. It's not, like, tough or dangerous. There's nothing wrong with being from a place that's not interesting. It's just not a thing I have to worry about.
I wasn't allowed at the Salem School courts after those guys shot it up, Luke, over a dispute, all right? You know. People remember, okay?
All right, I guess so. RKBC, well, it's time for you to make us remember you and for all the silly things you do. Take it away, good sir.
No, Luke, thank you. Here's what we do in this part, okay? We scour the globe, the highs and lows, the good and the bad, the in-between, the ugly, and all that stuff. From combat sports and beyond, it's called Have You Seen This Shit?
Have you seen this shit?
Luke, let's open up its own chapter for the women's strawweight bout on Saturday night. Cheyenne Bays versus Montserrat Conejo Ruiz. It started at the weigh-in, Luke. Check out your girl Montserrat's bunny ears, ink tats, and then this little piece of business to close. Okay. Luke, that spilled over into the fight. There was a lot of weird grappling and transitions, and this is where Cheyenne accused Montserrat of spitting on her, Luke. Your thoughts?
Did you see any actual spit fly? I didn't.
I don't know, but we saw middle fingers. How about Cheyenne saying, I'll follow you home, bitch? This was almost like Strikeforce Nashville. Like, hey, guys, we're on national television here, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I'll follow you home. That's a threat, you know. My hunch is she might have done that once or twice. She's probably, if she actually did follow Conejo home, it wouldn't be the first home she followed another lady to.
Well, footage resurfaced from Cheyenne Bays' Dana White Contender Series fight where she swore down her opponent as well. So she's a little feisty. And then, Luke, here is the winner, Montserrat, getting all Betch Kohea on her ass. Luke, I did pop for this, okay? This was a little bit shameless, but this was like, you know, what are you going to do about it, right?
Bro,
you down with this?
Dancing in Latin America, or they go hand in hand, bro?
She's the Mexican Betch Kohea, and I think I'm here for this. I think I am, Luke. So congratulations on this victory. I hope you didn't get followed home. But that was some kind of theater these two ladies put on Saturday. Luke, also on UFC Vegas, you mentioned bantamweight Adrian Yanez. Let's just get a look at this sick KO of Gus Lopez.
Mm.
Oh, boy.
God damn. I mean, that is...
Feels good to watch that, right?
That is sick. That is just amazing. I mean, the timing on that could not be better. You could not have... It's not possible.
Oof.
That is just perfect.
Luke, there were a lot of... so many contenders for knockout of the night. Did you see bantamweight Montel Jackson? This is how he do it, Luke, against Jesse Strader in round one.
Oh. Got to keep your hands up on the clinch break, guy.
Yeah,
tries to sit for the alligator roll.
Good action. I guess that wasn't the finish. Is this the finish?
This guy's got bad defense. Not bad defense. He's got porous defense on his left side.
Maybe it's not the knockout comes from. What do I know?
Let's see where the knockout comes from. I actually did not see this fight. He switched. Let's see. Left hook. Oh. Didn't matter.
All right. Well, Luke, Bruno Silva also had a heck of a... That's violent. That's violent shit right there. Grant Dawson had a finish with 1 second left. We don't have that in here, but check out Bruno Silva beating up Cheyenne's husband, JP Bays, Luke.
Okay, I will say this. His tattoos are excellent. They're very good. He's got a portrait on his left shoulder there. It's really quite good.
The Bays clan went 0-for 2. A heck of a knockout there for Bruno Silva. But, Luke... I loved his celebration even more. Did you see this shit as Bruno Silva was exiting the octagon?
Yeah, dude. He's athletic. I'll put it that way.
Dude, that
tall ass lurch motherfucker in the back nearly got blitzed.
I was going to say your Armenian coach would have loved the head movement here from that security guard. Nice work. Yes. All right. Luke, let's move over to the NCAA Division I Wrestling Championships from over the weekend. Luke, one of our best viewers, Lee Selker, has been on me to get all over Gable Stevenson from Minnesota. He's your heavyweight champion, and at 285 pounds, Luke, check out his now patented backflip. Luke, our boy Lee, who, by the way, sent us some Peruvian spices that he wants you to try out that his wife is into, he says that Gable is the next big thing in either pro wrestling or MMA, and he's going to have his pick. Luke, what are your thoughts about this guy?
Yeah, this isn't even the best angle. I watched this guy win. He was I won't say he was losing, but he was going sort of halfway through two periods and then just rolled past this other dude who he had faced, I think, in, I don't know, Big 10, Big 12 finals, whatever, this dude from Michigan. And then and if you watch it from the other angle, BC, this flip, you see the elevation he gets. This dude is nearly 300 pounds, and he's out there doing a back handspring with a turnover. I mean, that is crazy athletic. So wins a national title, does a huge flip, and is a showman as well. Shit, that guy can do whatever the fuck he wants.
And if you're named Gable as your first name, you better freaking wrestle.
I think his middle name, by the way, is Dan. And he was given a shout out to Dan Gable, and his name is Gable Dan, whatever his last name is, Sterling, whatever it is, Stevenson.
Might as well just name him Gable Sanderson Stevenson, whatever the hell his name is. Shout out to our boy Lee Selker, who did wrestle at Duke. So shout out to that guy for pointing us out to this. Luke, let's go to one championship here. Ayaka Zombie Myura. Luke, what the hell submission is this?
So that is essentially a paintbrush or an Americana with her legs. She's going to drive the elbow forward and the hand back in place by driving her hips up like that, and it torques the elbow in the wrong direction. So it's the position is called a scarf hold, and then from here, these are judo players who are very, very good at this. They particularly excel.
Whew. Nobody loves Japanese MMA more than me, Luke, and this is I don't know what country this was in. One championship, maybe. That is great. That's a great finish right there.
I can't
shout
hear
out to
you
Juan for that one.
McDonald's Wi-Fi
Luke, it's time for regional. Oh, good. Maybe I won't get in trouble for what I said. Luke, regional MMA where any fucking thing can happen.
I can hear you.
Four seconds in, and we got some testifying, Luke. Get ready.
Jesus. Get the fuck out of my face. You know what? Jesus didn't tap, BC, and neither
should
you.
4 seconds in. Wow. Look at... Damn right. Look at the background here, Luke, at this regional show. There's, like, tables and shit. I think this might be, like, a bingo hall with, like, some actual bingo going on in the background, Luke.
Yeah, this is a community where there's probably not a lot to
do. You can hear me anymore? I would agree with that.
I can hear you.
Hell of a four-second finish. Okay, let's move on to Miami, Luke. Spring, I don't know if you've been watching the news, but spring break is going well. Super spreaders uniting, Luke. This little get-together forced a 8 p.m. curfew in the city of Miami Beach. Your thoughts?
I mean, they appear to be having a good time. I don't even know what. We are... You ever see other people and they seem like otherwise nice and normal or normal enough anyway, and then you realize that you and this person have nothing. You don't look at the world the same way, not even a little bit. And everybody would say, oh, look, that's me and you, but it's not me and you because we love MMA. I don't have, when I say nothing in common with these people, BC, there isn't enough money in the world to get me to go hang out with these people.
All right, Luke. Younger Luke Thomas, maybe. Whatever, maybe. Right,
maybe.
Gino? Maybe.
Who knows? Right. Well, no, Luke, I tend to listen to science.
The police are having trouble corralling everybody down there on Miami Beach. Check out this guy getting away, Luke. I don't know what they put him in the cruiser for, but his buddies jacked the back door. And we free, brother. We free. White guys on parade. Here we go.
That is fucking awesome. Dude, when I was in New Orleans once, I was walking down the street, and I was in Bourbon Street, obviously. Where else would I be? And, you know, I was drunk and hammered, and there was this girl who was a total fucking mess, and she was really mad at the people in the balcony because she wanted beads, and she was showing the goods on the street for the beads. But the dudes who were throwing the beads at her were, like, chucking in her face, and they kept hitting her hard, you know? And she was getting super bitter about it. And I felt bad, but what are you going to do? You just, you know, people are going to do what they get. So finally, she gets mad at them, and then one of their girls comes down to fight the other girl who was flashing the things and then getting the beads thrown in her face. They start rolling around. You've been to Bourbon Street, right?
Yes.
Okay. Dude, they're rolling around on the street in Bourbon Street with, like, the horse manure and piss and vomit and beer and grenades that have spilled everywhere, the hand grenades, you know? So then the cops come, and now, you think I'm making this up, this was the craziest shit ever. Now the cops come, and they're trying to arrest it, and then the one girl who was not with the, she was the one who was in the street originally, the crazy one, she starts fighting the cops, so they taser her as they chuck her into the van. And it was, the sun hadn't even set, I don't think. That was my, well, was a night in New Orleans. And then a horse bit my hand, BC. I tried to pet, I tried to pet
Cajun drunk. 19.
I was drunk and I tried to pet, you know how they always have the cops on horseback there? I tried to pet one of the cops' horses, and he let me for a second and then bit my fucking hand, and it hurt like shit. He left a knuckle imprint in it for like a month.
What was the name of the horse in Half Baked? Buttercup, Luke?
Something like that. I forget.
Remember?
Yeah. I don't know, but that motherfucking horse bit my hand.
Luke, we got a new spring break sport. It's called Bowling for White Chicks. Check out this third guy in this video, Luke. Okay. No, whoa, what happened? What happened, Manich?
I was like, this
no
is spring break?
No bowling for white chicks? No, this ain't no spring break. Bro, 5C. 5C. On your bingo card. On your, we don't have that. All right, Luke, fast forward. Here we go. DAZN undercard.
That sounded good, too. I wanted to see that.
Sunisa Estrada, who, Luke, we saw her beat up that soccer mom last year. She was back against a real fighter and a world champion, Luke. Check out this early knockout she had in which the ref not only grabbed her boobs but knocked her over. Your thoughts on that, Luke?
You know what? Some of these guys will just do what they can to get what they can.
Under the auspices of
yes, creeps, yes. Creeps.
Nice little finish there for Superbad. I believe she won a decision. It was a big time win for a rising young fighter. All right, Luke. Remember when they used to show those insane dramatized videos during Driver's Ed of bloody accidents to scare you about the severity of driving? Check out this video about the severity of forklift driving. Look, this is great. This is so good.
Oh God. Oh, Jesus. Dude, what the fuck is this shit?
So good, right? Yeah.
It's a fucking snuff film. I get it. The shit is dangerous.
Watch the old guy in the break room coming up. Look, it's so good. Luke, don't forget that I was forklift certified as recently as 2006, okay? Don't ever forget that. Thank you. Thank you, Luke. Yes.
I wish you would saw into your own thigh like that.
Yes. Hey, let's move on, Luke. It's International Women's Month, but I don't think this is what they had in mind when Title IX was created. Can we check this out, guys? Do we have this? No, we don't have it. What the hell's going on today, folks? You got number 8 or no? Do we have that? No? Number 9? No? Number 9? Manich?
BC, let me ask you a question. When this happens where you throw to the production element and it gets fucked up, who should I blame? Because I'm going to blame
probably
somebody. Is it your fault or is it their fault?
Gaff and Manich try their best to sort out the bullshit I give them. But hey, Luke, what the hell's going on here, Luke? This can't be Title IX regulated.
Oh, jeez. Oh, dude, he's swinging on her. Oh, what the fuck, man?
No, he's going for it, bro. He's going for it.
Dude, what Slavic country is this?
This is how they settle marital disputes in Belarus, Luke, okay? Marital disputes?
What is this? Honor Killings FC? Jesus Christ.
She's in high heels, Luke. What is this?
Dude, this is fucked up. This is, I can't watch this shit.
Yeah, get this off the Manish. Manish was probably right on trying to skip this. All right, let's go to some Muay Thai, Luke. Check out this front kick from hell, brother.
Oh.
Oh, God. Oh, pack that guy up into an attaché case, right? Let's call him Samsonite. Let's put a handle on him. Oh, God. Wow.
That's a nice shot, too. He thought the guy was going to walk into the punch, and he stops to plant and then takes advantage of his low hand on his other side. See his hands by his waist on his left.
You might want to pick that guy's soul out of your toe hair. I mean, that is just unbelievable, Luke. Yes.
Yeah, dude.
Wow.
Yeah, wipe your feet when you go home. Wipe your feet on your welcome mat when you go home. I think your opponent is stuck in your shoe.
Luke, Khabib Nurmagomedov officially retired this week, and Russian fans are celebrating his great legacy. Luke, look at this.
This would be racist if they're not white. You know that, right?
It's great, Luke. You don't follow Look at This Russian? It's the best. It's the best thing going on Instagram, Luke. Come on.
I can't say this is my number one go-to on the gram.
Luke, you have to understand, not only am I half Lithuanian, but Lithuania was under Russian control for most of my youth, Luke. Okay, so, yes, thank you. So, Luke, inevitably, these are my people. Especially that guy on the far right coming up. Luke, that guy's the best. Not that guy, that guy. Yes, yes. All right. Whew. All right, Luke, this will be you and me making the walk of shame to the Jersey City train station the morning after we reach 100,000 subscribers on YouTube, Luke.
Who's going to be in the car? Damn, dude, she's out there just sunning her.
God, meth is a hell of a drug, Luke. I know that you used to pay $100 for a haircut, Luke. It's the most obscene thing I've ever heard, but if you could get this pulled off, that might be worth it. What do you think of this, Luke?
Damn, bro, what did someone do, like, they fucking Photoshop your hair? I mean, that is terrible.
Dude, I would pay $100 for that. That is legit. If I can find a barber down here in San Juan who can do that, woo!
It's like you sort of admire the art behind it, and then you're like, you couldn't go anywhere with this fuckboy haircut.
Oh, there's a lot of places you could go, Luke.
Would you get married with this haircut?
Damn right. I got no issues with that. Luke, Justin Gaethje may be out of the lightweight title picture, but endorsement deals are flying. Let's check out this.
Protect yourself at all times. You know what I mean. Swipe up below for a chance to win some Trojan swag, like this hoodie and a gym bag full of condoms, signed by me. Protect yourself at all times. You know what I mean. Swipe up below for a chance to win some Trojan
swag. Now, wait a second. Is he going to sign the condoms?
A gym bag full of condoms, signed by me.
Luke, enter now to receive a signed gym bag full of condoms from Justin the Highlight Gaethje, Luke.
Yes. I'd rather have a gym bag filled with signed condoms. Like, you know, you're about to bang, and you pull open your Trojan condom, and you're like, thanks, Justin Gaethje. And then you go to town. That's a great day. Right?
That's pretty weird, but that's MMA. All right, Luke, it's time to rate that tat, okay? Let's start off with boxer Devin Haney, who got a tattoo on his right leg of his knockout of Alfredo Santiago. And, Luke, this one is intense. Let's hear your thoughts as we transition to the next slide.
Oh, God. That's not great.
The artistic detail is, like, well above Mr. Hibas, right? It's pretty good.
Spot on par. It's a little bit better. It's not great. It's not great at all.
Wow. Okay.
Look at the guy who got knocked down's face. Does that look like a normal human face to you? No, it does not. The referee looks better.
Luke, you're the Simon Cowell of tattoos, all right, bro?
I send you good tattoos all the time. They don't look like this. You know that, and you know I'm right too.
I think that's good artwork. I'm sorry. I think that's good artwork. I'm not mad at it. Okay.
There are parts of it that are okay, but there's a lot of parts of it that are kind of fucked up.
All right, all right. How about this guy's arm, Luke? He wanted Tomb Raider Lara Croft. So let's play the video and see if it's a dead-on look, Luke.
Oh, motherfuck. Did he get some shit job? I love it when tattoos are cleaned with a guy with no gloves. That's always a good sign. Gotta tell you, that's...
level. This is...
She looks like that. You ever seen those? You ever seen that? Oh no! Oh, that's bad. Yeah, that's bad.
That's pretty bad, Luke.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not great. She looks like that. You ever seen that? Like the blob fish that they find at the bottom of oceans. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. Yes.
That's what
I
she
do.
Looks like
yes.
here with two pistols.
Is that Angelina Jolie? That does not look like her, Luke. Let's go back to the boxing ring in England, Luke. The referee lets Maxie Hughes pretty much take Hughes Highland Jr.'s soul here after this referee botch. Check out this.
Okay, he's beating on him. Oh. Jesus. Oh, he lets it go? Oh, what the fuck?
Oh. That ain't cool, Luke. That ain't cool at all.
Bro, these rules of this boxing match are brutal. Jesus, what is this?
Oh, boy.
Well, you know what? It got stopped. It got stopped. So, like, you can't complain too much. But that was Granddad. Jesus. He's been fucking early, huh?
Yeah, that's, you know, once somebody turns... That's why they have that rule in boxing, that if you turn your back on the action, the referee can stop the action right there and end the fight. Because... Yeah. You're defenseless. You're basically saying I'm done. You know what I'm saying? So that's not good. Wow. Hey, Luke, good news. Maniche has tracked down our new spring break sport, bowling for white chicks. Yes, here we go. Let's check this out. First flip successful.
Oh no.
Second okay. flip successful.
All right. Oh.
Oh, that's great. That is great stuff. Oh, that is so good.
Shit.
Tough spring break this year. Yep, it is. All right, let's get back on track here, Luke. Our Street Fight of the Week, flipping for crackheads. Check this out, Luke.
Wow, dude, he really... he went ass over tea kettle, didn't he?
Yes, yes, he did, Luke. Yes, he did. It kind of looks like the guy in Billy Madison who Billy gave the company to at the end, right?
No, it looks like Dr. Fauci took an L. Doesn't it? It's like, dude, why is Dr. Fauci wearing jorts and taking L's in street fights? I don't know, but here it is.
There it is. I got one more for you, Luke.
Hold on. You know, BC, what's the dead giveaway that this guy is obviously some kind of street vagrant?
There's many, Luke, but how about the wet stain on his left leg?
That's big. I agree that that's big. I'm going to say watch the right hand in the pocket. It never leaves, either because he's too hammered to move it or because he's holding on to drugs as he falls.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I'd like to see that guy who scored the knockout against fake Jeff Goldblum, who had that fight in Richmond in front of your sister's house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got to do a street fight like tournament.
We should actually become street fight promoters. It'd be great. All right, Luke, I got one more. It's white people being white people doing flaming mo shots. Check this out.
Mm.
Or maybe it's
how
flaming.
Could this, how could this go poorly? Yeah, 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 yeah. Not smart. These are
Maniche. Can we big screen? Can we full screen this, Maniche? There's a lot going on in this video. This is great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Look at that guy's face, Luke.
This is, you know.
It's peak honky. It's peak honky, Luke. It is.
This is
great.
They celebrated this by playing Smash Mouth and banging their sisters. I don't know. It's something awful, I'm sure.
Well, that's the shit, Luke. We've seen it. We've seen it all. All right. Thank you.
I just can't. I can't believe that they're white, guy. It's just so out of character, BC. It doesn't make any sense.
No, how could I'm that with be? You on that.
BC, time for odds and ends. What do you got?
Khabib Nurmagomedov here was in the crowd at UFC Vegas over the weekend, and he ended up doing an interview with Megan O'Leary, Luke, that they used as sort of a teaser to check out the post-game show. As I got camera issues. That's all right, though. Luke, no surprise, and this probably should be the last time we talk about this, but this was the final missing piece of evidence in this whole ridiculous Khabib retirement saga where we were always like, you know what? We haven't actually heard from Khabib. Luke, he admitted in the interview that not only, yes, he is done, which we already knew the other day, but that he never actually had any intention coming back, nor did he actually ever tell Dana at any point that he was even considering possibly coming back. I mean, I don't know what I want you to say. I just want to put the final stake in it where you always say, hey, look, we love Dana, right? He's given us all these great fights. He's a big part of us making a living now. Yes, he'll trash us in a 4-minute video if he needs to. But maybe we don't believe everything he says without fact checking it.
I don't believe anything he says without fact checking it.
This was just sort of the final, like, well, what about you, Khabib and USADA? Or what about, will Khabib accept $50 million? Shout out to Khabib for being true to his mother, which is what he said in that interview. And it's done. It's over. We will never mention it again. He said, he actually told Megan, Luke, I've been retired for 5 to 6 months.
That's what they originally titled the video on ESPN MMA's YouTube channel, and then they changed it. You can imagine why, because it makes Dana look bad. Why would you accept? I mean, okay, I understand it. Dana is the president of a major corporation, and a lot of times what he says is true, or at least ends up being true. But on what basis could you possibly argue that you are in good standing by taking anything he says at face value? I would never do that. Never, ever. I would always try to get another perspective on it. To corroborate it. I'm not telling you he's not telling you the truth. He very well might be. But there's an inconsistency enough that just accepting it blindly? No, that seems like a bad idea. All right, for me, BC, I wonder what you make of this, Brian. I didn't know what to make of it, but I found it kind of interesting. Chop Chop Corley, DeMarcus, what was his first name? I always get this part wrong. Yes, DeMarcus Corley,
Chop,
sorry.
Chop Corley, Luke.
Yeah, Chop Chop Corley. He came back at BKFC. He looked to be in pretty good shape, BC. But he lost the fight, retired after the fourth round, basically, and told the referee that he quit. Now, BC, Corley's 46, and when Malignaggi fought Lobov, he was long past, you know, washed at that point. But I got to tell you, I'm a little bit surprised that the boxers, even in those conditions, have done not well in BKFC. No. Is there anything to that?
Well, it's interesting, right? And we know that the BKFC rules allow for the clinching and dirty boxing that you know, a Randy Couture style in MMA.
Yes.
Sorry, Luke. I'm burping on air today.
Yeah, but hold on. It's more than that. They start closer. The rounds are shorter. Obviously, they're not wearing gloves. There's just a lot that's different.
Right, and mostly what we're finding out from talking to the fighters is, you know, you can't load up on your shots. You got to be really strategic and all this stuff. It is surprising to me for how many we're seeing so many more washed MMA fighters end up in this, and we're seeing very few former at all. But at the same time, Luke, I'm not seeing people dominate or overuse and abuse the. So that's not like the excuse. The excuse isn't like, oh, they're utilizing skill sets that boxers have never had to deal with. They're just not having success. But at the same time, look, it's washed Pauly and it's hella washed DeMarcus Corley, who, Luke, I mean, it feels like 20 years ago when he rocked Floyd Mayweather in their fight and rocked Miguel Cotto in their fight and sort of, you know, was a world-class 140-pound fighter back then. So I don't. This is the wrong case study to compare, but yes, it's weird that boxers. That I mean, there's no shortage of washed boxers out there who are looking for one last payday. You don't see a lot of them going to BKFC. It's interesting, Luke.
So again, I'm not saying boxers are bad in BKFC. These are two fights, smallest sample size ever, and two guys well past their prime. But I don't know. It just seemed a little strange. All right, BC, you want to follow me or the other one over there? You certainly may. You can follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, and MK is everywhere on social. Same name everywhere, but obviously, as you can see, BC and I have slightly different names between Twitter and Instagram between us there. If you want to email the show, we want to get your submissions in, which we'll do on Wednesday. Our dead wrongs on Friday. MorningCombat@gmail.com is the place for that. And you want to buy some merch like this wonderful tumbler, BC, you can go to store.show.com. That and much more is available there. More merch on the way. And then if you want to try Showtime for the Bellator experience, or, you know, not, up to you, but it's going to be on there starting in April, you can go to show.com/BellatorMMA. You see the URL right down there. $4.99 a month for the first 6 months. Again, you get to watch Bellator, you get to watch Showtime Championship Boxing, and everything else on demand. It's the entire Showtime experience, so that should be a lot of fun. Look,
I'd like to apologize to Manish and the viewers for I effed up my camera. I hit the cord. I'm sorry about that. I did want to plug our stuff, Luke. I had a nice sit down with Emmanuel Sanchez that's going to be on YouTube, I believe, today, ahead of that April 2nd Bellator MMA debut. Also, you and I, as we talked about last week, did record some very professional looking extended previews, not only of how we got here in the Featherweight World Grand Prix and what to expect in Pitbull Sanchez 2, but also a full preview of the 205 pound bracket. I believe the Featherweight one launches today on YouTube. Is that a truth, Luke? Is that a fact?
I don't know. I thought it was the 27th that it went up. No?
All right. Maybe we should check our facts. Anyway, I'm going to have a nice chat with the champ, Stipe Miocic, tomorrow. So a lot of good content coming people's way. Luke, maybe we'll do another resume review. You want in on that?
Okay. Do you believe that there's a resume review curse?
Well, we're going to find out. If Francis Ngannou sends Stipe to Hades, Luke, on Saturday, it's going to be a trifecta. It's going to be three in a row. So maybe you should consider who you say, hey, BC, why don't we resume review this guy? I mean, do you really want a hand in changing the fortune of MMA cosmically, Luke, with your voodoo dolls that you do, the voodoo that you do when we do this MMA resume review here? Let's be a little bit careful. We already ruined Connor, okay? You already gave Izzy an L. Do you want that on your conscience to end Stipe's title reign?
I don't believe in that kind of nonsense, but certain people do, and so for those reasons, I'd be curious to see if you did. I don't believe in that, though. BC, you were right. Road to Bellator MMA, Pitbull versus Sanchez 2 will debut on Monday, March 22nd, while the Road to Bellator MMA Light Heavyweight Grand Prix will premiere 1 week later, Monday, March 29th, on Showtime Sports and Bellator MMA YouTube channel. So it should be out today. Be on the lookout. Manish, did we lose BC? Where is he? No, we didn't. We saw your camera get unplugged, and we have lost you on the live view. So great job. All right, well, I'm going to close it out from here. Thanks to everyone who watched Showtime, Mulca, CBS Sports. We're back on Wednesday. As BC said, we plugged all of our content. Please be on the lookout for our Road to Bellator MMA Pitbull versus Sanchez 2 special, which, by the way, BC hosts. And that's it. For Brian Campbell, I'm Luke Thomas. Until next time, may all of your gains be loyal.